RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
New Zealand's decreasing gas reserves. An MB report states that New Zealand's gas reserves represent only 8.7 years of use, and the deliverability of gas from current fields will continue to decline. We wanted to find out more about our dwindling gas reserves. Who better to contact than Harvey Week? Harvey is the former Managing Director and Senior Vice President of Manufacturing of Methanex NZ. Methanex is one of the largest suppliers of methanol in the world. You could say that Harvey has become RCR's go-to expert for energy and petroleum matters, and it's good to have him back. Hi, Harvey. Thanks for coming back on our program.
Yeah, thanks there, Paul, for having me.
All right. 8.7 years goes by pretty quick, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Obviously, this is not good news for New Zealand. It's not only gas reserves, it's also it impacts, well, not only just gas supply, but also LPG and condensate. Condensate is basically unrefined petrol. So all right. of these effects will play out in New Zealand. First, it'll impact the petrochemical area. So currently New Zealand produces both methanol and ammonia urea. So, you know, those are going to be adversely impacted. And just that sector, that piece alone, we're talking about over $1.5 billion New Zealand a year of gross revenue. So and most of that, or a lot of that, goes into exports. So I think if you add those together, it's about eighth largest export sector in the country.
Okay.
Yes. So that would obviously have a big effect on GDP and government revenue, tax revenue, also the highly specialised skills required to support the industry will obviously either move offshore or be redeployed somewhere else. But you could see that the effect on GDP would be a drag of maybe 0.3% a year. So it's this is not an insignificant issue.
No, in fact, the way you're describing it, I'm feeling like we've got a real big problem on our hands here. And, you know, the walls are closing in a bit.
Well, if we say, okay, let's say we come to the end of our days of producing domestic gas, then what are the alternatives? What are the options available to us? So the first one is that clearly we could replace domestic natural gas with imported liquefied natural gas. But given the size of our population and the size of the consumption or demand, I would imagine that's probably pretty unlikely to make sense capital-wise. I think the capital costs would be too big relative to the size of the economy. So if we can't do LNG, then we're probably talking about importing diesel in order to provide the peaking capacity that the electricity sector needs. So don't forget there's firming capacity, there's peaking capacity, and then there's intermittent capacity, and then you've got the hydro and geothermal. So you've got a role of gas as providing peak power from about 6 o'clock onwards till about 8 o'clock at night, and then again at sort of 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock in the morning. And those things wind up very, very quickly within, you know, and they're all remote controlled, relatively low capital costs compared with what they actually deliver in megawatt hours, and incredibly useful for the country because as soon as it stops blowing and there's, you know, you need that sort of peaker unit available. So we could potentially run those on diesel and import diesel into Taranaki, use the existing infrastructure and pipe the diesel into those units. So that's, but that will clearly be much, much more expensive.
And dirtier too, right? Dirtier.
Well, yeah, it obviously produces a bit more emissions, but in the scheme of things, it's we would need to have it. And then at Huntly, we would definitely need to refurbish Huntly to wind that capacity back up so that we can produce maybe, you know, three or possibly even four of the big units inside that power station to be able to run on either imported Indonesian coal or bio-coal produced from forestry waste. And there's some interesting opportunities in New Zealand that have been progressed that, might fit that. But again, the nature of the power generation from Huntly is firming. It's not peaking. A portion could be peaking, but you know, the benefit of the gas peaker is that they can start up within a few minutes,
right,
maybe less than 10 minutes. Yeah. Coal-fired power station or a wood-fired power station doesn't have that sort of response time. So it would be required to cover New Zealand in a drought or in dry years where you're trying to conserve the hydro lake capacity for the following subsequent winter. So you're definitely going to need to expand Huntly, and you're going to need to run the peakers on diesel, is my, you know, unless you can support the economics of LNG. And then the remaining natural gas will have to be prioritised into running, you know, the hospitals and the hotels and domestic hot water and domestic heating, which is, you know, relatively small loads. But and then you've got the, you know, all of the existing infrastructure, all the pipelines, all of those costs are going to have to be spread over a much thinner volume of gas. So the cost of gas is going to go up.
There's nothing good about this hearing
no,
you talk.
There's nothing good. And the thing is that, you know, when the gas is flying, you know, we all just take the benefits for granted. We, you know, out of sight, out of mind, we enjoy the benefits. We don't see the benefits, but, you know, we have to pay the police and we have to pay the doctors and the teachers and nurses. We have to pay them from something. So, you know, if you can't, if you don't get this domestic revenue, then you don't have the revenue. It's not like you can just make up money from somewhere else. It's not going to come. So it's a big effect. And so we need to plan for that transition. And as we build out more, you know, wind and solar, we're going to need to import more diesel and coal.
Wait on, do we need to make this transition? Is this gas that's running out because we haven't done any prospecting or don't have any new gas fields that we know about, but they're probably out there somewhere? Is there an opportunity still in this time span anyway to find new gas and sort of go all out? Because it sounds like, you know, it's a national priority. Again, by the way, you're talking.
Well,
are the fields out there? Can we find more?
Geology is getting more and more challenging. So in an eight-year time horizon, you're talking about incremental gas being brought on in Taranaki. If it's outside that, if it's the Great South Basin or off the coast of Canterbury, you know, that's a horizon bigger than 8 years, longer than 8 years. So, you know, the geology is challenging and the politics doesn't make it easier because clearly, you know, Labor and National would need to align or get onto the same page with regard to exploration so that at least you have political certainty going into the...
So a bipartisan approach to it.
Yeah, and so, but it still doesn't take away the fact that the geology here is still challenging. And we're a long way from the markets. You know, it takes a lot of money to bring the rigs down from North America or Asia. You know, you've got to get the support staff down here. It's very difficult.
But we've done it before, haven't we?
We have, but we've also had a political landscape that's been stable.
Okay, so that's kind of the key.
That's the key. So if you can't get that stability of bipartisan support across the House, then I think it's going to be really tough.
Did the previous government halting all this, in that time that it's been, let's call it paused, because now there's talk of this sort of exploration again, though I know what you just said, that this is been a crucial sort of pause that's robbed us of time to get ahead of it, to try and understand what the consequences of that were.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. But having said that, there has been still some drilling that's occurred. I think there's been 8 wells drilled in the last few years, or 7 that I'm aware of, and I think all 7 have not been particularly successful. So it's very tough. I think the previous government's moratorium basically killed the excitement and energy out of the sector.
Right.
You know, the enthusiasm, the optimism.
Yeah, but you need that, don't you? You need human confidence and optimism to make a move.
You do, and you've got to have people that are risk takers and prepared to back their analysis. And so, you know, even with a good political environment, it's still tough. But, you know, we have achieved great things in the past. And could we achieve it in the future? Absolutely.
Why don't we just put a nuclear power plant somewhere?
Well, that's possible. Nuclear power is a pretty good option, but it's a little way away yet for New Zealand. I mean, you know, we've got a lot of geothermal capacity.
Well, maybe crank that up.
We could, but geothermal is base load. So once you build it, right, it must run all the time. So okay, it has a very important role to play in the mix of the sector. But you need a mix of base, you need a mix of firming, and you need a mix of peaking, and clearly you've got the
option of
the renewables, which are coming and going depending on whether it's sunny or windy or not. So you need that full suite of options. But as we build more intermittent supply of wind and solar, we're going to need to back up the coal and the diesel or the peaking with more imported fossil fuel. That's the dilemma. And it's not the fact that the quantity of coal and diesel is going to go up. It's just that we're going to have to become even more reliant on it.
Which is going to blow a lot of heads, isn't it?
It is. It's an odd outcome, and people don't really sort of see that. So I'm not a fan of just continuing to build out solar and wind. I think all that's going to ultimately do is make New Zealanders poorer.
Can we make more dams? We used to be good at making dams, Harvey. We used to be good at that.
Most of the dammable
Are they done, are they?
Yeah. That's been done. That was done in the 50s and 60s. But we have a great geothermal resource and we have a great forestry resource. You think of all of the slash that's come out on the beaches.
Millions of tons of it.
Exactly. And so we could produce enough to run Huntly at 500 or 600 megawatts continuously. You know, there's a lot of material, but it requires, you know, a combination of collaboration between the private sector, you know, the venture capital markets. You need sort of good longer-term customers that are willing to enter into a longer-term supply deal. But, you know, that technology is actually available. And I think there's going to be a niche for New Zealand to occupy that space. So I think that's positive. So it's just that, you know, if people think that we're going to turn off the tap and have no emissions from all this, it's not reality.
Well, it turns out it's almost the opposite.
It's opposite because the natural gas is a low emissions peaking option, and we don't really have anything to beat it anywhere in the world apart from, or even nuclear. Nuclear's not peaking.
Though we do have resources in coal and, like you say, the forestry material to replace what natural gas would have delivered. We do have them, but we just have to agree that we need to do it and have some security politically that in the time ahead, this won't just chop and change and flip in an election cycle.
Well, it's nothing like a few blackouts to realise that this is real. And I think the political consequences of interrupted supply of power in the country is going to sharpen our minds very quickly.
Okay, so we're talking about that 8-year period. Do you think this is all going to happen within that period pretty well? I guess MB thinks that.
Well, who knows? I mean, I think the nearer term outlook is that the petrochemicals are going to get wound back. And electricity peaking is going to get increasingly constrained. I think those two are near-term, you know, there's a reasonable probability that those near-term consequences are going to play out.
Harvey, anything more to say about this before we end the chat?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, this is the lay of the land, and while there are some interesting opportunities, we're going to need to make some adjustments.
Yeah, like switch off the light.
Wow.
I'm doing my bit.
Yeah, no, I think, you know,
it's more than
New
that.
Zealand's
got
a lot of resources. It's we're very lucky. It's, you know, we just need to focus our minds.
But we're being a bit slow, it feels, just a little slow off the mark.
We're not particularly focused on this issue.
No. Well, let's hope we can focus people on the issue. Thank you, Harvey Week, for coming back on RCR.
Not a problem. Take care, Paul.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.